But what do we have left once we abandon the lie? Chaos. A gaping pit waiting to swallow us all.
Chaos isn't a pit. Chaos is a ladder.
Welcome to The Anglophiles, a podcast where two Americans rant about British TV shows. I'm Danny.
I'm Sheldon.
And we are Anglophiles.
I don't think I rant often.
We rant.
Am I a ranter?
We rant and rave.
I can politely rant. I'm not that angry of a guy.
So, this week we are talking about, gosh, maybe one of the biggest things we've talked about.
It's a big pop culture sensation.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones.
We have got red wine
in
goblets. We have got Game of Thrones Oreos here.
We're ready to go.
We've got a special British treat for our snack time.
Ooh,
that's very fitting.
It's pretty Game of Thrones themed.
We've both just rewatched the entire series up until this new season.
My whole life right now is Game of Thrones. And it's like, it's a little bit of a joke, but it's also not a joke at all.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like you said, I've rewatched the entire series.
Yeah.
At work, we have an office pool betting on who we think is going to be the last person or the person who's sitting on the Iron Throne.
That's dangerous.
I'm in another pool where we're betting on people who are dying.
Mm.
And then I just got invited today to a fantasy league.
Ooh.
Where you bet on, basically, we're going to draft people on Saturday morning.
Yeah.
And it's who we think is going to kill people and who we think is going to have sex with people. And it's all sorts of stuff. And I'm like, this is insane how much it's...
Yeah,
it
really is.
A TV show has taken over my life.
It's so big. Like, it's not that often that there's a show this big that everybody's watching. We have so many TV shows out right now that it is very rare for there to be something that most people are watching. And I think that's, right now, that's Game of Thrones.
And especially a fantasy show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's really rare to have all of America watch anything, but something like this has never happened before.
Something so very genre.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, we can get into that in a bit. Well, what I find interesting is that it is, no joke, a dark and stormy night outside.
Yeah, it is scary.
I was driving home to get home so we could record this, it was much darker at that time of night than it normally is. And it's also windy as hell, so it's kind of like the most fitting setting for us to talk about Game
of Thrones. If you live in LA, you probably know what night we recorded this, because it's the one where, like, trees are falling down everywhere.
It's dark and stormy.
It's dark and stormy,
which is so unusual for Los Angeles.
Whenever I came back into our apartment complex, there are, like, giant pieces of a palm tree out where our pool is.
Yeah.
We don't have a palm tree in our apartment complex. Like, how did that get there?
The wind.
Wind.
Yeah.
It's dangerous. I mean.
So, let's talk about a couple of things before we really get in and start talking about Game of Thrones.
Sure.
Let's talk about stuff this week. There have been a couple of really interesting things happening this week. Yeah, some British news. So, thought we'd talk about it. Number one, you saw I wrote down on this paper, mountain theft.
Yeah, I saw that and I went, what is mountain theft?
Did you hear about this?
I have no idea. I know what the next thing we're talking about is.
So,
but
this week, an artist, apparently went to the top of the highest mountain in England and took the top inch of the mountain and stole it and put it in a gallery, and it's on display. And now he's being accused of vandalism, because you're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to take
a rock.
It might be one of those, like, over here in the US, like, national park things, like, oh, you can't take these rocks, like, you can't take the thing out of the park. I don't know what it is, but he is being accused of vandalism for putting that on display. And what a lot of people find interesting,
I mean, I find the whole thing interesting.
It is very interesting, but yeah, it's the highest mountain in England is called Scaffold Pike.
Legitimate question, it may sound like a joke, but I am seriously asking, how tall does a hill have to be before it becomes a mountain?
At
one point,
have you seen that movie?
No, is there a hill Is there a movie where, like, a hill grows into a mountain and he becomes, like, a big boy?
There's a movie called The Englishman Who Went Up a Hill and Came Down a Mountain. It stars Hugh Grant. You've never heard of it?
No.
Well, then your question was amazing.
Also, the grammar in that makes me think he comes down, like, and he's grown into a mountain himself.
No, I think what it is
I think it's a playoff of that.
He's like a city boy who is sent to a small town who this town's been calling their mountain a mountain, but it's recently been said, like, oh no, it's a hill. And so he has to go and, like, help them, like, he has to, like, measure it and help them prove. And then they're trying to, like, build it up at the last minute. And so they're trying to, like, delay his, him leaving and, like, delay him. It's a really...
It sounds delightfully boring. Like, it sounds quaint and very British, and I'll have to watch it.
Well... Well, anyway,
so somebody stole that mountain.
Yeah, and put it on display, and a bunch of people in England are really mad, because they were like, you can't do that, because I don't think it was a British artist. And I don't think it's on display in Britain. It was like someone else from another place came in, took this thing, took it out of the country, put it somewhere else, and a bunch of English people are very upset the way it's being put on display, and that is essentially what art is, you know? Something that is provocative and... starts a dialogue, so...
Yeah, it evoked an emotion.
Otherwise, in British news, Fawlty Towers was just named Britain's best sitcom by a panel of comedy television experts for Radio Times Magazine.
And I read the article, like, an hour after you did and went to post it and saw that you had already posted it.
Well, yeah. We had to share it from our Anglophiles Facebook page.
Yeah, it just cracked me up, where I was like, ooh, I'm gonna post this, our Facebook page is gonna love this. Already been done by you.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting. Because, you know, comedy, again, we've talked about this many times in the podcast, but comedy is subjective.
Very subjective.
Fawlty Towers is just one of those things where the formula of it is just so perfect.
And John Cleese is one of the most underrated performers of all time. Like, I know he gets his due, but at the same time, he doesn't. Like, he is one of the greats. Like, the greatest comedians that have ever lived.
He's great. And then the last piece of news is we received a Facebook message on our Anglophiles Facebook page from a listener who lives in London.
Which is...
very exciting.
No joke, one of the coolest things that's ever happened.
Yeah, I've looked at the analytics for our podcast, and they kind of really do range, like, all over the world. I think it's Yeah, I'll show it to you.
Oh, wow.
It's mainly the US and Europe. So, and then the biggest concentration of listeners are in Los Angeles, California, but I don't know if that's just because we've gotten people we know to listen to it, or because Angelinos are so into podcasts, so, like, that could be part of it.
You know how whenever you go to Venice Beach, there's always a guy there that's trying to sell you his rap CD?
Yeah.
I sit down there with our podcast, and I have earbuds, and I force people, like, when people come up, I just put them in their ears, and I'm like, pretty good, right? And whenever they're listening, I'm just downloading it on their phone.
That seems like a lot of work. I think that we expected mainly to have an American audience for this, just because it's from an American perspective, and Anglophiles is kind of an American thing.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Or is it people from all over can be Anglophiles?
We're learning that now.
Anyone could be an Anglophile. But, I had always wondered if we would get anyone from England listening, and if they did, if they would enjoy it, or if they would think that we're just trash.
Yeah, and it turns out at least one British person does not think we're trash. The rest of the country might hate us, but that guy likes us.
Yeah, his name is Philip Lockett.
Which is delightful.
I think that's how you say his last name. Now we can say, hey, we know a British person that likes our podcast.
Yeah, we do.
And that's all we need, really. That's all we need. Philip has offered to recommend some good treats for us for this podcast.
I think is going to be great, because it's, on one hand, it's great having other Americans, like our friends, recommend foods for us to try, but that's still from our palate.
True.
It's what people like with an American palate. So I think it'll be interesting from a Brit who's recommending things.
Yeah.
That it's stuff that he eats, maybe not every day, but has eaten a lot more of than just people who try it out here.
Yeah. He's also offered to send us stuff if there's something in the UK that we can't get a hold of. I know, so that's awesome. So, one last little piece of news. We have Game of Thrones Oreos.
Oh, we're so excited for them right now.
I figured we could open them before we really start getting into the discussion. Maybe we'll have some Oreos.
Just casually crack in.
Give ourselves some sugar. pop us up. We'll have more energy. Yeah, you need
that. So wake up.
Here's my plan. I'm going to post a picture of the Oreos on our Instagram and Facebook so you can see it. The packaging is so cool. This is the special edition Game of Thrones Oreos.
Can we talk about how much HBO has been nailing, like, the... all of the advertising for this season.
The marketing campaign for this season has been great.
This is such a cool package of Oreos.
Because the Oreo packaging has been classic. The same color blue as long as I've been alive that I know of.
Just seeing this O with the three little, like, the hand of the king stripe coming down through it.
Yeah. Oh. And the package is all black and it's got all the names of the different houses on it. It's so cool. So, the Oreos in this package... are, instead of having the Oreo logo on them...
they're special.
They have kind of like an engraving
of different
houses. There's a Stark, Targaryen, the Lannister, and then the White Walkers.
Yeah.
So I figured, instead of just opening them up and eating it, I thought it'd be fun if we kind of peel it open.
Ooh, yeah.
You and I both pick out a cookie, pull it out, and see what we get.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I like it.
So let's open it.
And that's who we have to support this season.
Yep. It's all decided by a cookie.
Each of us will grab one.
Like double stuff.
Yeah, they look real thick. I haven't had...
take it out.
I'm not looking.
Okay.
I haven't had a legitimate Oreo in a while. And these do look like they have a ton of icing.
Like the very center one.
That's what I go
for. I'm going to pick one from the edge. All right. If you could choose which one you got, which one would you get? Between Lannister, Targaryen, Stark, and White Walkers.
I mean, it's kind of cliche to say Stark, because they seem like they're the main characters of the show. But
they're the Gryffindors.
I know, and that's why, like, I'm not a Gryffindor, I don't like, but I love me some Starks. All those kids are like the X-Men, and, like, their dad is Sean Bean. How do you not like that family the best?
It's pretty cool. I hope I get a Targaryen.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
Let's see what we get.
Let's look and see what we got. I got Stark.
I got Lannister. Ooh. Ugh. Hear me puke.
You gotta support... you gotta support the Lannisters now.
I mean, there is a non-zero chance that Cersei is the only one left at the end of this season and she's still ruling, so I could get behind that.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Would you continue to stay married to me if I dip this in my red wine?
Can I marry you twice?
Have you ever had an Oreo dip in red wine?
I have not. I think, neither can I experience this with you?
Yeah. I think some people might think we're crazy. I think might think that we're like the Mad King.
I think a lot of people ask, you know, like, what's married life like? It's dipping Oreos into red wine. Ooh, not good.
I don't hate it.
I really do. Ugh.
All the good, delicious flavor of the red wine
is gone.
Got completely masked by the Oreo, and all that was left was a strong rubbing alcohol.
Yeah, that's like, it reminds me of maybe the first time you snuck alcohol from something, and that first taste, you're like, whoa, this is what adults drink?
Well, that was interesting. So that's something we've been through together.
Yeah.
So this week, obviously, talking about Game of Thrones, where do you even start? This episode, I think, is going to be different in formula to our regular Anglophiles episodes.
It's true.
Part of that is because a lot of the shows we've covered have been shows from the 70s, 80s, 90s.
Early 2000s,
even. Early 2000s. And we've done a lot of, like, informational background stuff. Like, here's what you need to know about it. And I kind of feel like everyone listening to this probably knows enough about Game of Thrones.
But also... Game of Thrones is still on the air.
It's true. It's still on the air.
It's still going right now, and there's going to be a whole season after this podcast.
Yeah.
And so we're approaching it with a different lens a bit. So this show may be a little bit different.
So Game of Thrones has been an entertainment juggernaut for the past decade, really.
Yeah.
So what I want to know is, when did you start watching it? Was it right as it came out? Was it a little bit delayed? I know that you read the books. Did you read the books before you saw the show, or did you start the show and then read the books?
I did it kind of concurrently. I saw the pilot because one of my friends was my friend Kelsey was a big fan of the books, and he was, I think, almost finished with all of them by the time the show was airing.
Yeah.
And he was like, you have to watch this. So I watched it with him, saw the pilot, was hooked immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And he let me borrow his copy of the first book. And so I powered through, and I didn't finish it by the end of the first season, but I finished it by the time the second season came out, and I caught up on the books very quickly.
Wow.
And, I mean, they're long books. It's a lot of, like, honestly, he's a very good writer when he's talking about food and battles and stuff, but he also has, like, 70 characters named John. So it's a lot to get through with the books.
Yeah, John Aaron.
Yeah, he's a phenomenal writer, but also very verbose. Mm-hmm. But then it really hooked me into the world of this show, and I'm so excited that HBO now has the money to create a show that everyone wanted to live in for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, he started writing these books decades ago.
Yeah, it's true. Didn't they come out in the 90s? Were they published in the 90s?
Yeah, each of the books has been published, like, 4 to 7 years apart. So it takes a long time in between books. Now is the longest, I think.
Yeah.
It's going on its 8th year. I don't know if he'll ever finish.
Wow. Yeah, I remember I started watching it, I think right as the second season had come to a close.
Mm-hmm.
I started watching it, I like binged the first season and all of the second season, and then was able to get really excited for the third season with everyone else and watch it. But then, of course, and then I had to go week by week, and I was devastated after having binged it.
It is a really good show to binge.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and what's interesting to me, too, is that, like, at first, people watching it were anyone that was psyched about fantasy, anyone that already had HBO, anyone that was like, oh, I know what this is and I'm into it. And I think it took years for, like, your everyday average person, I think, to really get into it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was just a big switch that it went from, like you said, at first it was people who were really into, like, slow burn political dramas,
mm-hmm.
people who liked Lord of the Rings, and then people who liked seeing, like, violence and nudity in HBO shows. And then it was accepted as more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And people realize, like, oh, this is the new, like, Breaking Bad. This is the new Lost. This is the new...
I think, honestly, I think that The Lord of the Rings really led the way for this show to be made and to be received well. Because before that, fantasy... Like, we've always had fantasy movies ever since we've had movies. But, like, I think fantasy's kind of gone in and out of being popular.
Yeah,
and
they've never been mainstream.
Pretty big in, like, the 80s. You know, there was a lot of fantasy then, like, especially, like, medieval European-based fantasy.
But none of it got critical acclaim. You know, none of it was critically acclaimed as much. I think it was, even then, it was just a genre film.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think you're right. Like, it wasn't until... Like, Lord of the Rings came out and Return of the King won Best Picture.
Harry Potter 2.
Both of those really changed the landscape.
Yeah.
And they did it in such a way that it made fantasy mainstream, but then Game of Thrones exists in a world where it understands that those shows and those big things are mainstream,
mm-hmm.
and it subverts your expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Where this is a show where, at least for the first 4 seasons, anyone could die. You don't know who your main character is in this show, and that's exciting.
Yeah, I think they really set a precedent for anything could happen in this show when Ned Stark dies. Played by probably the biggest name at the time in the show, and everyone was super excited for Sean Bean, and the moment he died, before the first season even ends,
you're
just like, what?
Yeah, what were you thinking? What went through your head when
you
saw it?
I was very upset because it's Sean Bean.
Yeah.
He's great. And his character is great.
Oh, Ned was so noble.
I think you really just, like, were like, oh, this guy's going to be the hero of the show.
I think up until the axe swings, you think, he's going to get out of it, right? Like, mm-hmm. something's going to happen. Somebody's going to come in and shoot the executioner and he'll get away on horseback. But no, it very quickly teaches you this world, like our world, is not fair. It's cruel. And the whims of a leader can change the course of history.
So do you have any favorite characters?
I have lots, but...
Who do you think are some of the main audience's favorite characters? Like, who are some of, like, the world's favorite characters?
I mean, number one and number two, who the series is named after. It's a Song of Ice and Fire, Jon Snow, Daenerys Targaryen. Those are, like, that's who everyone loves.
Really?
And I'll give it.
Because I think a lot, I hear a lot of people say that Tyrion is their favorite.
I mean, I think a lot of people love Tyrion.
There's a lot of favorite characters.
I think, I mean, a lot of people really love Tyrion, but I think Jon and Daenerys impact, like, together 80% of the story is them two at this point.
Yeah.
And as it should be, they're on a very big quest, both of them. And I think Tyrion is important as well, and I think he is the funniest character. But all of the Starks are pretty big. Arya's great. Sansa has really come into her own. Bran, don't forget about him. Like, he's a crazy Professor X level mentalist now. I mean, I do love the Lannisters, even though Cersei's batshit crazy. Jaime has had an incredible arc himself. He is probably one of the best heel to face journeys in modern dramas that I can think of. Like, and he did it effortlessly, going from somebody who you hate to somebody who you really wish the best for now. We understand he's in a tough position.
Yeah.
But my all-time favorite character is Ser Davos, the Onion Knight.
Yeah, he's great. That's my dad's favorite.
I love him. He's just, he's the kindest man, and he really understands both, political strategy as well as human nature. He may not understand combat as much, and he may not understand how to talk to lords, but he is somebody that's much needed in a palace, in a throne room. Who do you like? I'm sorry, I've been just babbling on about everyone that I'm obsessed with, like, but what characters do you like the most?
I really liked Dany to begin with, mainly because people called her Dany.
And that is also your
name. She's also really small, as am I.
Yeah.
So, but she's also very smart, and I really liked Dany's journey in the first season. She was definitely, like, my favorite character, especially when she got in with the Dothraki and, like, really, like, made a name for herself and just, like, didn't back down from any of their crazy, really hardcore ways of living and
very
culture.
Very terrifying.
Yeah, she just kind of, like, took it all and, like, made the decision to, like, make the best of this marriage that she was forced into, turn it around, make it an actual romance, and, like, gain all of this support of the Dothraki. And so I really, really liked Dany. And then in later seasons, she's kind of fallen out of my... She's still a great character, but she's kind of fallen out of my favorite.
It's hard to tell people that, the people who really love Daenerys right now, that, I mean, if you think about it, she's kind of echoing her father, the Mad King.
It's true.
Where she's burning people alive, and
I don't really hear anyone really criticize her as much as you, I think.
I
know that you really like her.
I think there are people online who criticize her a little bit, but I think for the most part, she is widely celebrated because, like you said, she's been through so much in her journey, and technically, she has the right to the throne, except not anymore, because what's that? Jon Snow has the birthright.
Yeah.
Who's going to end up on the throne at the end?
Arya.
You think it's going to be Arya?
No, I don't. But continuing my favorite characters, Arya, I think, has been one of my favorite characters the whole time, but yeah, I think that she really is, like, at the top of my list if she's not the number one. She's just, I'm so proud of her. The stuff that she's, like, the things that she's been through.
She's traveled
for,
the world.
I'm always impressed when I see a character who's either a child or very young who makes the smart decisions that are just so wise beyond their years, and it's just so much smarter than I ever was as a child. And so I'm just always impressed by that. So, yeah, I love Arya. I really liked Oberyn. He was a favorite.
I
love
incredible actor too. Like, he played him well. I know he was
great.
He was a book favorite of mine, and that was one of the, like, there are five or six moments where I, like, threw my book across the room. That scene's heartbreaking.
I also love the Hound.
Yeah.
So much.
Do you think we're gonna get Clegane Bowl? Get hype.
Wow, you are so 2014 right now.
I hate it so much. I hope, by God, I hope we don't.
Yeah.
Like, what's wrong with just letting brothers not see each other again? That would be fine.
I don't know. I mean, it is interesting that they, you know, they're... It has always been interesting ever since they were introduced. I forget who was telling Sansa, was it? Maybe it was Peter Baelish was telling Sansa, like, the backstory of the Hound of the Mountain.
Yeah.
And so you were like, oh, interesting.
Pushed his face into the fire.
Yeah, so, like, I think they have always been interesting. And I think maybe everyone wants the Hound to kill the Mountain.
And I think that's why I don't like it. Because Game of Thrones should not be... It should not give us what we want. And I think that's what makes...
But it has sometimes.
In, like, seasons 5 through 7, yeah. And I think that's where it's fallen off a little bit for me. It's still a great show. I'm liking it a lot. Like, honestly, everyone out there, just know that it's still the best thing on television.
Mm-hmm.
But I enjoyed it more when I genuinely didn't know what was going to happen. Rather than just based on the pieces left on the board right now, you can kind of piece together, okay, I guess this is where it's heading.
Yeah.
I'd rather go, I have no idea where it's heading. Mm. And then when all of a sudden, like, these people you like are in a position where you realize, oh, they're about to die. And then all of a sudden you're like, but what is the show about then if they're gone? And I feel like that doesn't happen if you're like, I really want the Hound to fight his brother again, because they should, because they have so much backstory. Then what are we doing with this show? Like, what is the rest of the story if it's just fan service? Yeah.
What do you think about the world that George R. R. Martin has created? Because I would say, like, he really has done almost anything you need to do with fantasy writing. The same thing that J.K. Rowling has done, which is, like, designate areas, like, designate your world, designate, like, there's foods that are... Like,
yeah, that are plentiful, things that exist in different parts of the world.
Yeah, she, like, invented, like, special foods, kinds of money, kinds of languages.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, it's a very, like, J.R.R. Tolkien kind of a thing, where they very much focus on world building. I think that George R.R. Martin has done a good job of being restrained on the amount of magic that the world relies on. Mm-hmm. Like, at its core, this is a political drama. That's what the show, or that's what the books are.
Yeah.
It is the War of the Roses. It's a bunch of... Excuse me. It is the War of the Roses. It's a bunch of houses jostling for power. Great houses falling to nothing, like, seconds after a new house rises up from the ashes. It's people trying to get the throne. Mm-hmm. That is what the show is at its core.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of lesser writers really try... to, like, play around with, like, tons of magic and crazy creatures and animals.
Yeah, which I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Right. But I think that's one of the reasons why it's successful. Whenever he gives us dragons, it takes them seasons and seasons for them to be big enough where they're spectacular. But now they are.
Yeah.
The show really takes its time. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that.
And that's one thing I love about Game of Thrones is... just about every single thing that happens in it is all part of the game that is the title of the show. And like every sex scene, every death, like every political move, every battle is like part of the game. And I think that's really cool.
And what do they say in the first season?
Walking Dead, a show that we stopped watching just because people were just randomly dying.
Yeah. Well, because they would introduce characters just for them to, like, their sole purpose would be to die. Whereas this show introduces characters and then you realize, like, oh, you are a main character now. Mm-hmm. Like, when Tormund came along, you think, oh, he's just a bad guy wildling, and whenever he dies, it's going to be painful. And now he's a good guy?
Yeah.
Because you realize this world is very morally gray, and there are more things just than who lives on what side of a wall. I'm sorry for being political, but it's people are people, and there are bigger threats to us. And... I think the show is, and the books are, very metaphorical in a lot of ways. And I think if you really think about it, being afraid of something that's not just humans, being afraid of something else besides humans, it's like a looming threat, is a very big thing that he plays on and that the show plays on as well. And now that threat's here.
Yeah.
And can humans stop it?
So apart from favorite characters, do you have any... favorite houses or countries or cultures?
I love the Greyjoys.
Me too!
Except for Theon, he's the worst.
I like Theon. He's an interesting character. Nah. But I love the Ironborn, and I'm glad that you like them,
They're great. They're batshit crazy. They're hermits that live alone on an island and drown each other, and they worship, like...
I really love their...
The craziest god.
Their dedication to the sea. Yeah. And I also love that they have this, like... They have a salt throne, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Where did I get that?
I mean, it's what they have. Okay. But, I mean, they don't really care for titles that much. Like, they have a king,
saying,
but...
Everything I love about the Ironborn is that, yeah, it's like iron, salt, water. That's all they have, and
do you
that's
know their
all
house motto?
We do not sow.
We do not sow.
Yeah.
And
like
what does
Ironborn.
That mean?
It means you only take.
Yeah.
You don't build anything.
And that's
just
like,
take.
They're the pirates of this world.
Yeah.
They're like Scottish pirates, basically. I love them.
Yeah.
I
like the Ironborn. I like Dorne a lot.
Yeah, and Dorne is a beautiful place. It's supposed to be gorgeous, and they really muffed that storyline. That could have been great, and they just...
Yeah, I think that was maybe one of the most disappointing storylines
in the whole
show.
Was
anything that takes place in Dorne, unfortunately.
The sand snakes all miscast.
Yeah. But I also really love the Brotherhood Without Banners.
Yeah.
I love them so much. They're so cool.
And there are people who, like... In the books, I like them because they like come and go and they're exciting, but I never really latched onto them. And then in the show, the people who play Beric Dondarrion and Thoros of Myr do a brilliant job. And so the first time when the Hound fights him and the Hound defeats this man and kills him and he's brought back to life and he's jovial about it.
Yeah.
You can't help but love them.
Because he's been brought back to life so many times.
And now, but now sadly, he's on his last life because Thoros got bitten by that bear.
It's true.
A zombie bear. That was the...
That's really scary.
That may have been one of the scariest things on the show. Oof.
There's some scary moments.
What was a big scary moment for you? What was something that was unexpected and just like you gasped?
I mean, the Red Wedding, but I know I'm not alone in that.
Came out of nowhere.
I had gone on a kind of a vacation when that aired, so I missed like 2 episodes. And so I didn't have HBO at the time, and so my friend Alex Tam offered to let me watch the 2 episodes at his place.
Yeah.
He had seen them, and I had not.
Oh, so he was waiting for your reaction.
I knew something was happening during the wedding because of the way he was holding one of the pillows that they had on their couch.
Yeah.
And he was just clutching it and tensing up, and I was just like, oh, something bad's gonna happen. And
then the doors shut.
The minute... And I mean, and like, as it starts to happen, you're like, oh, okay, but you've seen people get stabbed in this show. You've seen, you know, we've seen the violence. What I was not prepared for was Talisa getting stabbed in the baby.
That was too visceral, and I hated the show for doing that. That was uncalled for.
It was pretty haunting.
Yeah, but I think I could do without it in this show. And here's hoping they don't rely on it in the final season.
Who else is really cool?
I mean, we've touched on a lot of them. Varys is neat. We haven't mentioned him. Yara Greyjoy.
The Tyrells are cool.
Yeah, they're okay.
I like Olenna. I really like...
Lady Olenna's great.
I really started to like Marjorie.
Loras is somebody who you like in the beginning, and then as time goes on, you're like, oh, you're just a dumb bro. That's all he is.
Yeah.
Poor Loras.
I really like Melisandre.
I hate her.
Well, I mean, she's...
She is the worst.
She's making bad decisions and going too far, I think, with her beliefs, obviously. Yeah. But I think I love the actress. And I think she's an interesting character.
The actress is playing her well. Love that she's, like, actually 100 years old or something.
That's
cool. Where's that? The Red God is the one that I think is the one true God. Like, George R. R. Martin has gone on record saying there is one God of Westeros, and I think
it's
the Red God.
You think
it's
the Lord of Light?
Yeah. I think
so. Interesting. Yeah. Because, like...
It's,
I mean, she obviously has power.
And the
she
Hound...
She brought Jon Snow back.
She brought him back to life. The Hound sees, like, the Arrowhead Mountain in the flames. I think the Beric Dondarrion gets brought back to life a dozen times.
One
like,
thing
there's
I
a
just
lot.
Have to say that I love about those guys...
Do it.
...is how, like, their lord gives them the power to, like, if they sacrifice, they get this, like, fire power. And so I love... There's a moment in the show when they're gonna be attacked by something. I think it's whites or something.
Yeah.
And they both
light up.
Take their swords out and just run their hand along it to like make it bleed. And like as they do it, the blade catches on fire. And it was just one of the coolest things. It was like the fantasy equivalent of like a lightsaber.
Yeah, it's a good little moment.
I loved it so much. It was one of the things that made me love them as much as I do.
It's very much like a Seven Samurai homage, that whole scene with everyone going forward. And you're like, none of you guys should be together, but you work together.
Yeah.
Love that scene. That episode's great.
Who are some of the best team-ups? Because I really like Arya kind of, not teaming up with the Hound, but Arya's like little road trip with the Hound. I also really like Jaime and Brienne.
Yeah, Jaime and Brienne is the best. Actually, never mind, I take it back. Brienne and Pod is the best. I love that at first she hates that Podrick's with her.
Yeah.
Hates that like she has somebody because she's never needed anyone.
Yeah.
And then she slowly realizes he is a good squire, even though he doesn't know what a squire is. And he wants to learn from her. He respects her more than most people she meets.
Yeah.
And it's a good switch where she's just like, oh yeah, I shouldn't be that asshole knight.
Yeah.
I can be more than that. Mm-hmm. I love that team up. I love Brienne with anyone,
Brienne is
honestly.
A great character.
One of the best characters. We didn't mention her at all.
They cast so well.
Okay.
And I saw Gwendolyn Christie at LA Comic Con a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And I was shocked. You know how a lot of celebrities and movie stars... I think working at LA Comic Con, like, we've both seen a lot of celebrities in person. And, like, living in Los Angeles...
Getting to hang out with Barb from Stranger Things.
You see, like, movie stars quite often. And usually they're shorter than you would imagine.
She's, like, 6'2".
She was so tall. I was amazed at how tall she was.
All right, it's coming down to the final season. Who are you rooting for? Brienne and Tormund or Brienne and Jaime?
What do you mean? As, like, being together? Being an item?
Like, are you going for either or, like, solo Brienne?
I vote for solo Brienne. She does not need a man.
I don't think she needs a man, but I think Tormund needs a bear of a woman.
I don't know if Tormund's gonna make it.
Oh, no, he's most definitely gonna die. But I think Brienne might as well.
I mean, but
I think, honestly, most of the cast is going to die this season.
Probably.
It's going to be very upsetting.
Probably, yeah.
Danny.
What?
A snack break is coming.
What? What was that? Alright, it's time for snack time. This is a special snack time.
Yes.
I was really wondering what we should do for Game of Thrones, but I had kind of put off deciding what we were going to do.
It's true, because you could cook something.
Yeah.
Like on the show, but...
We could have cooked something from the Game of Thrones cookbook.
Right.
Which is very important to us, because that was our first Thanksgiving together.
Yeah, we cooked food from the
cookbook. As a couple, neither one of us went home to our families. We just kind of like... stayed in my apartment and cooked from the Game of... We cooked our entire Thanksgiving dinner out of the Game of Thrones cookbook.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
It was awesome. And then we just watched episodes of Game of Thrones and, like, drank wine. That was awesome.
That was a really good Thanksgiving.
But, yeah. So, yeah, we could have cooked something.
But that would feel... It would feel a little disingenuous where we're trying to celebrate British food. You know, like, British snacks. And Game of Thrones food is fantasy food.
Yeah, it's
true. You know, like, it's not the same. So, what have you chosen for us today?
Well, this was actually a suggestion by our new London listener, Philip. He said, hey, I said, hey, do you have any suggestions for British snacks we could try? And he was like, you guys should really do Cadbury cream eggs because it's Easter.
Because it's Easter.
And I was thinking about it and I was like, also, they're like dragon eggs.
Daenerys Targaryen dragon eggs.
So,
boom.
Perfect.
He didn't even know, but
so
he nailed
I
it.
Ordered Cadbury cream eggs from England. Because I know we have them here in America, but I think that American ones are Hershey's.
Oh, so this is actually Cadbury chocolate.
Yes.
Wow, okay, I've never had these.
Yes.
I mean, I've had the ones made in America, the cream eggs.
And that's my question. Like, have you had a Cadbury cream egg before?
I've had a cream egg, but I haven't had the other ones you have here, which are the caramel
eggs.
It's
true. I got a Cadbury caramel egg.
How do you pronounce it? I've never known.
I don't know. Some people say caramel, some people say caramel. I think...
How do the British people pronounce it?
I don't know. Probably...
Is it a Cadbury caramel egg?
It's probably caramel.
Caramel.
I don't know. Who knows? Who's to say? But
well, we've got a British listener.
We've got two kinds here. Have you had a Cadbury cream egg?
I have had a cream egg.
When was the last time?
Ooh, it's been a couple years. too long, probably.
The last one I had was, like, around 2005.
What? Why? Yeah.
I don't know. I just might, like, this wasn't really one of the things that my parents really got. And it's not something that I, like, if I'm buying candy around Easter, like, I just don't really go for these. I don't know if it's just, like, I don't see them.
See, this is, like, the perfect type of candy for me. I love just having one of something that I can munch down on the whole thing. And I like not carrying around a candy bar. This feels, I don't know, I like the feel of the egg. And the inside actually looks like an egg.
Yeah.
Do we want to open it up?
Which is fun, yeah. Let's both open one.
We're opening up the Cadbury cream first.
The regular cream egg.
I like, it's got a little chicken, or a little chick on the outside. First off, the chocolate, like, is shaped kind of like a Fabergé egg.
Yeah.
I want to say that
it's got
stripes on the sides, and it's got a little star pattern. Okay, so then do you just, like, take a giant bite? How do you go
I
in?
Don't know. I haven't had one in years. Let's just cheers.
Cheers. Mash them together.
Let's take a bite.
Soft, delicious chocolate. And the cream part on the inside, this one doesn't look as... I've had them before where they've been more crisp and clear, where it's very much white.
Yeah.
And then there is the orange little cluster, too, to represent the yolk.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's another flavor. Do you know? Or if it's just color?
I don't
color.
Think it's fondant.
Oh, the oranges?
No, the whole inside
all of
is fondant.
It is.
Also, right now, we don't have them, but in stores, Cadbury is selling an Oreo, Cadbury Oreo egg.
What?
I know. I tried to get some, but... I'm going to have to get some later. But they come with a little spoon, and you eat them with a spoon.
So like you like, crack the top.
Yeah.
So you've got a tiny little spoon.
I brought out a tiny little spoon. I'm eating.
You didn't set me up with
one
of those.
I'm sorry. You can use mine when I'm done.
No, I'm not fancy enough. I broke it in half, and I'm eating it like a half shell.
The fondant is going everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Right in my mouth.
It's interesting, because, like, part of me says I don't love it. That, like, there's so many other candies that I like. But now that I've had more bites, I really like it.
It's so rich and luxurious. Like...
It is kind of luxurious. The fondant is actually really good.
Yeah, it's very smooth.
It dissolves in your mouth as you eat it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
It's something, though, that, like... After this, I probably will be fine. I don't need another one for another couple years. Because I'll remember what it tastes like, and it's very good, but...
Yeah.
You can't make a habit out of eating these.
It's good.
Oh, man, I'm getting fondant everywhere.
Do you know... I looked this up earlier. Do you know when these first came out?
Ooh,
Take a guess.
1928.
Ooh, Well, it's interesting. There's not a straight answer. So,
why am I being quizzed if there's not an answer?
Listen.
Oh, you're like every English teacher I ever had.
What did you say? What year?
1928.
Okay. So, it says the first filled eggs were manufactured by the Cadbury brothers in 1923. However, the cream egg, which is this... In its current form, was introduced in 1963.
Oh.
And it was initially sold as Fry's Cream Eggs.
Fry's Cream Eggs.
And they were renamed Cadbury's Cream Eggs in 1971. So these have been around. Oh. This is like kind of one of those weird foods from the 70s that has just like stayed around.
Yeah.
There's a lot of weird stuff from the 70s we got rid of.
This one's just so simple though. Chocolate on the outside, fondant on the inside.
I think it's also a good size. If it were any bigger... I think it would make you sick.
Yeah, if it was like the size of a chocolate orange or something.
Do you want to try the caramel?
Yeah, let's do it.
I like the caramel egg so far. It looks very Easter-ish because it's gold, it's got little tulips on it.
It's the inverse Willy Wonka to me.
What does that mean?
Like, Willy Wonka's purple with like gold and white highlights, and this is gold with purple and white highlights.
Ooh, caramel egg.
I really like colors, y'all.
I was gonna cheers you.
So the outside of these look the same. They're both...
Yeah, they've got that decorative outside. Cheers! Ooh!
Oh, I like that. Oh, wow.
The caramel is such a different texture than the fondant in the cream egg.
I'm in heaven.
This is really good because the texture and the flavor is different enough from the fondant egg to make it... exciting. It's like, I think I miss the texture of the fondant.
Yeah.
But the taste of this caramel is so good.
We've talked about it before, but I love European caramel.
Ooh.
This is so good. Like, to me, I know it's heresy, but the chocolate is kind of interchangeable. Like, I like them both equally, but...
American
like, chocolate? American and European chocolate. Mm. I like them equally. Mm. I get it. I don't care. But this caramel is so much better than what we make, which is, like, very firm and sometimes, like, granulized and grainy.
Yeah.
This is... Oh, it's just so smooth and gentle.
This is kind of a messy... It's kind of an awkward candy. Because if you hold it, it melts.
You just gotta eat it all quickly.
Damn. But it's hard.
Yeah.
So yeah, what did you think overall?
I think I would hatch these eggs. These are eggs that I feel attached to, like Daenerys did with her eggs. Like, I want to carry them around always. Yeah. And just have them ready.
And then eat them.
Yeah, you never know when you're gonna need to eat one of these. But it's good for everything.
So overall, you liked this snack?
Very much so.
I think it's really good. I think I opened the cream egg, the Cadbury cream egg, expecting to not really love it. But I've been like really liked it. Yeah. It's really good.
It's a very good snack.
Yeah, this was a really good suggestion.
Good suggestion.
And now
and
we
a
have
a good little Easter treat.
A bunch more that we can eat throughout the week.
Yeah.
We'll eat them leading up to Easter.
Ooh, that's a great idea.
Ooh. All right, this is a good snack time, but let's get back to our subject.
Back to the show.
Are you ready? All right, let's go. And we are back from snack break. Oh,
I'm the father of dragons.
Thanks, are you? Wow.
No, definitely okay. Not.
Does that make me Khal Drogo?
Ooh.
If you're Daenerys.
I'm into it.
I've been working out my arms lately.
Yeah.
I've been putting my hair in braids.
And I've noticed you've been wearing a lot of blue body paint.
It's
as
true.
Well.
Yeah, yeah. People at work thought I was a little weird the first week, but yeah. Now they're used to
it. But now they're
it.
Afraid of you, so.
Yeah, that's all you need.
That's all you need. That's all make you your coworkers need. Fear you.
Do you have any theories or predictions about what is going to happen in this final season?
I've got a lot of weird, crazy theories. One of them, I think the Iron Bank might turn their back on Cersei.
Ooh.
Right now she thinks she has them and the Golden Fleet under her control.
Yeah.
I think they might turn their back on her because they like to be successful and they may see the writing on the wall and go away. Also,
that actually would be really cool. Like, it would be kind of a fitting thing if Cersei ended up losing because
she doesn't have money.
She learned that, like, trying to forge these alliances based on, like, greed and power aren't as strong as people actually, like, caring about you or believing in you.
Well, and it's something that their family has always said. Lannister pays their debt. She's always thought that her dad thinks he can buy his way through anything.
Yeah.
I would love for that to be her downfall.
Interesting.
Another thing, if that's not her downfall, I think... Here's my... Put on your tinfoil hat. Here's my theory.
Okay.
I don't think... The episode 3, I think, is titled Battle for Winterfell.
Mm.
I think it is a red herring. I don't think that the White Walkers and the others are going to attack Winterfell.
Mm.
I think they're going to skip it, march all the way down, and attack King's Landing first.
Damn.
And so I think, basically, they're going to catch everyone unawares, and they're going to send all of these armies to the north to Winterfell, and it's going to be them sitting around waiting and realizing, there's no one here, there's no one coming.
Ooh.
And then, like, the episode ends with just a dragon destroying King's Landing and Cersei watching it all happening.
Wow.
That's what I really hope. That's my crazy theory for this season.
That's an interesting theory. I definitely am imagining some kind of, I'm definitely imagining something happening where King's Landing and the Iron Throne themselves are just destroyed.
Yeah.
Where, like...
I agree.
Whoever's, like, fighting, like, ends up fighting to the death for something that isn't even there anymore. So, yeah. I could see that happening. Yeah. I don't really have that many predictions. I know that, like, whatever I think is gonna happen is not gonna happen, so I'm not even really bothering to, like...
See, I love going through all of them. I'm trying to figure out, like, I'm thinking of all the combinations of how a various person can end up on the Iron Throne.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how Sansa can get there. I can see it happening. I can see Jon there. I can see Daenerys there. And so, like, my mind is going through all these combinations, figuring out the story.
I do think it probably would be Jon. Because I think between Daenerys and Jon, John has not demonstrated much lapse of judgment.
Yeah.
I think he's been very noble and good, whereas Daenerys has kind of... She's maybe had to betray some of her ideals.
I think Daenerys betrays some of her ideals to try to do what she thinks is best, and Jon does the same thing.
Yeah.
I think he does... They both try to serve people.
Yeah.
And sometimes Jon fails to see the people that were already on his side.
Yeah.
And Daenerys fails to see the people that will never be on her side.
Yeah.
So I agree with you, though. I think likely something that might happen is Daenerys, like, wants to end up on the Iron Throne, of course.
Yeah.
And Jon wants to sacrifice himself for the realm. And so he agrees he's going to jump on a dragon and fly up and take down the Night King on Viserion.
Wow.
And he's going to sacrifice himself, but Daenerys doesn't let him do it. She sees that he would be a much better ruler than her.
Yeah.
And she goes and she takes down the Night King, but she and Drogon are critically wounded and they die. And once again, power is thrust upon Jon and he's forced to rule. And, I mean, he's the best for the realm.
Wow.
But I think that is how Jon ends up on the throne.
Interesting. Yeah, that makes sense.
I can definitely
see he and Daenerys kind of like both of them willing to sacrifice for the other one.
Yeah.
But I think that it would just be more... I mean, not to say that this show has ever demonstrated that it needs to give us the justice that we've talked about. But I think it would just make more sense for Daenerys to kind of like... you know, acknowledge that, like, she is part of the bloodline of the Mad King and maybe just, like...
Well, and I think she understands, she thinks she has the best claim to the throne.
Mm.
Once she finds out that she doesn't and that this other man who she's really growing to respect does have the best claim to the throne...
Yeah.
I think she will also respect that.
Mm. Is there anything you want to... anything else we want to talk about? I feel like there's just so much to talk about that we
there's
can't...
There's so even... much. The show has reached critical acclaim. I mean... Peter Dinklage has won several Emmys for the show,
yeah.
And a lot of other people have been nominated, from Lena Headey, Maisie Williams,
yeah.
Nicolaj Coster-Waldau.
Yeah, a lot of the people in this have really, their careers have really taken off.
Yeah.
You know?
And deservedly so. I mean, it's a show that's really, I think the actors have grown to the occasion, and they have accepted this insane thing that the show has thrown at them.
Yeah.
Where there isn't a strong plot line to the show. It's not, there's no strong central main characters. It's a lot of people who are telling a lot of complicated stories.
Yeah.
And the fact that these actors took that risk, like, coming onto this show.
Yeah.
And really have helped shape it into the juggernaut that it is,
yeah.
is amazing.
Mm.
And I think we can thank Benioff and Weiss, the two showrunners, for doing a lot of that as well.
Yeah.
That George R. R. Martin wrote... and helped work on the first four seasons. But season 5 through 8, they've kept the helm going. And, like, honestly, even though it's not, for me, as fun as it was in the beginning, I'm really excited for these last 6 episodes.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Gosh, I feel like there's so many things we haven't talked about.
Well, yeah, who do you think is going to die this season?
No, I don't know.
Do we want to get into that?
No.
Or what else do you want to talk about then? What is your craziest theory that you've heard? Like, I know people are guessing for this season. Let's just, like, dial it back with a little levity. What's just the craziest theory you've heard about Game of Thrones in general?
Well, my favorite one that I've talked about many times is the theory...
You can't even get through it.
That Varys is a mermaid.
Yeah.
And...
He's a fishman.
That he's kind of, like... And it's one of those things where you're just like, that's ridiculous. But, like, the person who wrote that up and posted it online, I think it was on Reddit or Tumblr.
Yeah.
But whoever posted it had so many good points. And I love a good fan theory where, like, it... Even if it's dumb, if the points made fall in line well enough, I love it.
And honestly, this is a show where a woman gave birth to a shadow assassin baby.
Yeah.
I don't think a human being part fish is that crazy.
It's true.
Like, a woman walked through fire and birthed dragons.
Yeah.
There are creatures that can touch babies and turn them into, like, demons. we can have a mermaid.
I love the people that say that, like, the show will end, like, the very last shot of the show will be Varys, like, standing on a cliff and then looking straight at the camera and, like, winking, like, I told you. And then, like, hopping off, like, leaping off and into the water.
I want it to be, like,
slippering away.
I want it to be Tyrion standing on, like, a dam and then Varys free willies over the top of him and Tyrion just, like, throws his hand up in the air and just gets wine all over the place.
Wow. Yeah, I wouldn't be mad.
That would be the greatest thing.
That would be great.
There are a lot of insane theories. I love that one. I like the one where Roose Bolton is a skin-changing vampire. Oh. I also think that one is real. Roose Bolton is really creepy and scary in the books. And they gave a lot of it to Ramsay in the show. And who is despicable. Can we talk about how the show handled villains?
Yeah.
Like, in a show where, or in a world, rather, where everyone does bad things.
Yeah.
They go out of their way to let you know, hey, you should not like this person who is now the king and a 14-year-old shithead. Or...
They definitely were able to create villains in this that are so much better than villains in anything else. Just that because the villains, like, you truly hate them. And because I think maybe the actors really contributed to that. Yeah.
The actors are so good. I think Jack Gleeson, who plays Joffrey Baratheon.
He was and so then good.
Ewan Rheon, who plays Ramsay Bolton. Yeah. I think both of them are so good and devoted to their roles that, like you said, you really hate them.
Yeah.
And it also makes you realize the qualities of a good leader.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff, whenever you see the absence of it in a bad human, it makes you appreciate it that much more.
It's true.
And you, whenever Tommen comes up, you're like, oh, he's not Joffrey.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Or even, like, in the pilot, when Ned is talking to his son, when he's about to behead the guy who deserted, he approaches it very thoughtfully and explains to his son why. And he doesn't come at it like he's just doing nothing. He knows that what he's doing, while it is required by law and he believes it is right, is a big deal. He's taking a man's life. Well, and just the fact that, like, when taking a life, that a character would really, you know, like, treat it that way.
Well, and it shows just how noble he is compared to people all over in the other parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
That Joffrey surely doesn't do that whenever he sentences Ned to death.
Mm-hmm.
He has an executioner do it because the North operates under the old ways.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing that this show does, is that they show you the old ways and the new ways. There are old gods and new gods. There's always history. People like Sam read and write, but then other people don't care at all. They're living in the present, and that's all that matters.
It's kind of amazing, like, Sam's, like, the only person who seems to be interested in the history.
But even then, the Maesters, whenever Sam is telling them, hey, this history, these things we've read about thousands of years ago that have attacked, they're back again.
Yeah.
And that these Archmaesters in the library say, well, maybe we'll get proof in a little bit. We'll wait and see what happens. And he's realized even the people who are interested in this aren't proactive.
Yeah, they're complacent.
They're complacent.
Yeah.
And Sam has realized he is not that person anymore.
That's very interesting.
Chaos is a ladder.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very true.
Yeah.
And that's what the show exists on. Chaos is a ladder, and...
Damn.
In the Game of Thrones, you either win or you die. And I guess we'll find out soon this season who wins and who dies.
Trying. One thing that we always like to ask ourselves when we review a British TV show, which I think still applies to this one, how British is it?
Okay, to our friend Kevin, who tried to tell us this is not a British show, I get it because it's HBO.
It's HBO and, like, it's watched worldwide.
There are only two American cast members. So in the entire run, in 8 seasons of the show, only 2 members of the cast are Americans. Who? Can you name them?
Oh, gosh. No. What?
Peter Dinklage is the first one.
Wait, is Pedro Pascal American?
He is from America, but he was born in Chile.
Okay.
And then he was raised there for a little bit and came to America.
Peter Dinklage is American?
Peter Dinklage is American.
Peter Dinklage is American?
Yeah, you didn't know? He's got a great British accent. But then also...
But he was in Death at a Funeral.
Yeah, he's in both Death at a Funerals. But then also Jason Momoa.
Oh, is born that in Hawaii. Makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Wow.
But yeah, I think
I consider it a British show just in that, yes, the entire cast is British. It's all British accents. Some of it's shot in Britain.
And it's like Westeros looks like the Isle of England upside down.
That, but it's also based on
a
European medieval type of history. So yeah. I think, while I'm it isn't you. As British as, say, Fawlty Towers,
right.
I still think it's pretty British.
I think it's pretty universal, too, as far as, like, political dramas go. I think House of Cards or West Wing, you could get into
British
this.
British accents and using British slang, I think. All that we have left to talk about is your British word have to guess.
Ooh, my word of the week.
So this is a British slang word, and it is Bagsy. B-A-G-S-Y. Do you know what that means?
Obviously, yes. Like, if you're bagsy, it means you can carry a lot of things. So, it's a good thing, like, if you're in a sketchy gang or something, if you've got, like, a lot of pockets, if you've got a big jacket, you're bagsy, you can carry a bunch of stuff. So, like, you don't need, like, do I need to carry my purse? No, I'm bagsy. Like, do you, like, did you bring knives? We're gonna go get in a fight. Yeah, I'm bagsy. Like, what about, we're going to the theater later. Oh, don't worry, I'm bagsy. I got food all up in me.
You got candy?
Yeah.
That is a great guess, but it is incorrect.
I'm pretty bagsy.
Bagsy, apparently, is the equivalent... Calling bagsy is the equivalent of calling shotgun or dibs on something.
Oh.
So, this, according to this article, school kids might call bagsy on items from their friends' packed lunches, like an apple or a cereal bar, that a friend isn't going to eat. Does anyone want this bagsy?
Yeah, it's like as literal as children like to be.
Yeah.
Like...
Well, good guess. Good guess, Sheldon. That was good. Yeah, I think this was a difficult episode just because it was out of our usual formula.
Yeah.
But also, there's, like, we could talk about Game of Thrones. Like, there are entire Game of Thrones podcasts.
Yeah, where they break down every single episode. There are ones where they break down all of the books. I would love to do that, but it's not, they're not British, really, the books. So,
that's
like,
true.
George isn't a British writer.
That's true.
So it just doesn't make sense. And
yeah, well, maybe we can do a Game of Thrones episode after we watch this season.
Yeah.
Like, when it's over, we can do kind of a final season recap or, like, entire
what
show recap. Yeah. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Go out, get some Game of Thrones Oreos. Don't dip them in your red wine unless you're into that. I don't know. You can find us on Instagram at Anglophiles Podcast. You can find us on Facebook, Anglophiles Podcast, files with an F. We are also anglophilespodcast@gmail.com if you want to send an email, give us a treat maybe we should try, or a slang word that Sheldon should try to guess.
Or a suggestion for a show that we need to watch.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, we've got pretty broad taste, but there's still shows that we've never heard of.
Yeah, tell us what you want us to watch. Thanks again for joining us. Keep calm and carry on, because now it begins.
No, now it ends.